Hello and welcome to Dear Franny, the podcast of uncommon conversations about love. I'm your host, Francesca Hoagie. Today, I talk about race and dating, and particularly the challenges of college-educated women in general, but college-educated women of color in particular when it comes to dating in the digital age. And my guest today, she is an expert in this. She is Sarah Adeyinka-Skold. Sarah is currently a doctoral candidate at the University of Pennsylvania. She also has a bachelor's degree from Princeton University in sociology, and she earned a master's of social work from the University of Chicago. She's a licensed clinical social worker. She likes to sleep. She likes to read fiction and nonfiction, and she watches Law and Order with her husband, and she laughs hysterically about things she finds on Black Twitter. So she's both brilliant and incredibly relatable. Please enjoy my conversation with Sarah Adeyinka-Skold. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So someone sent me an article about you and your research, and I was like, oh my God, I have to talk to her. I got to find her. And I instantly stalked you. So thank you for being open to that and not thinking I was a complete weirdo. Kind of just for the people listening, I already know your bio and a bit about what you're doing, but kind of tell me about your research and what you found and what we're going to do about it.
My research basically is about dating in the digital age. And it's less about like, oh, what does it mean to be doing online dating, and more about what does it mean to be finding a romantic partner in a time when online dating is a tool that people use, in a time when gender expressions and gender norms are in flux, in a time when race still matters and racism still matters. So that's basically what the dissertation research is about. And for me, what I've come to as a result of doing a lot of reading and looking at the work that has come before mine. So this isn't new. This idea of looking at relationship formation isn't new. Lots of awesome sociologists, psychologists, social scientists have been doing this work for a long time. So I'm building on the work that they're doing. I'm not coming in and saying, oh, look, I'm so special. No, I'm just building on the work that they're doing. So for me, I think what I've concluded from what I've read is that there are barriers, there are obstacles that people encounter in relationship formation. And even though it seems obvious, this is more of a sociological look at this. So in reading literature, I think that there are barriers that people encounter when they're looking for romantic partners and trying to form romantic connections. And some of these barriers are systemic, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just like, oh, well, that guy sent me a dick pic and now I can't date him. I think that we can talk about dick pics and aggression and misogyny and exclusion as all part of sexism and racism. They're part of these larger systemic issues. So that's what I'm interested in, basically, are how do these oppressions or these systemic issues, how do they bear down on everyday people's lives? Specifically, how do they bear down on college-educated women's lives as they're looking for romantic partners?
I love it. I love it. I mean, I don't love the reality, but right. I love that you're doing this work. So not everybody who's listening will be familiar with this, but OkCupid, which obviously is a big dating website, they've been around for a long time. They've been great consistently about releasing a lot of data about their users and their users' behavior. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when OkCupid released all this information a few years ago about how the people made choices online based mm-hmm. on race, mm-hmm. and, you know, in the hierarchy of popularity mm-hmm. online, Black women mm-hmm. were at the bottom, right?
Right. Right, yes.
And I know a lot of people were really surprised by that. They're like, oh, what do you mean? No, why would that be the case? And it's like, you know, and people like me, probably people like you, were like, yes, hello. Mm-hmm. Like, this is nothing, mm-hmm. this is nothing new. And I guess, you know, and particularly college-educated Black women, you know, mm-hmm. Well, I am one. I have tons of friends who are. I have, and most of my clients are not necessarily Black, but
all of my clients are college educated women. And it's really interesting to see how this plays out in the real world. Because, you know, women who, like, it's a lot harder. I mean, my white clients versus my black clients, like, they're doing the same things. And the white clients are just, it's just a lot easier on the whole. I mean, I'm definitely generalizing here, but it's a lot easier for them to get dates. It's a lot easier for them to get that traction online. And do you think, and so what is your... So kind of like in your specific research, obviously, I know you saw the same thing, that we're at a disadvantage as Black women, but how big is that disadvantage?
So first of all, I want to say I'm really glad that you, even though it's anecdotal, as a researcher, I'm always glad when people's personal narratives in their lives match up with what I find in my data, because it's like, okay, I'm doing it right. Again, even though it's not good news, the point is that this work, my work, bears witness to people's experiences, right? I don't want to just be doing research that is like, oh, this is nice work, but nobody gets it, or it doesn't actually apply to anyone, or no one feels seen. I want people to feel seen in this work, even if it's not like hunky-dory and amazing. So yes, I have found the same thing. So I looked at Black, white, Latinas, and Asian women. So women who self-identified in each of those categories. And so what I'm looking at are barriers. And generally speaking, women, college-educated women, face barriers. All of us face barriers in our romantic partner search, but those barriers are going to differ in severity and type by race. So generally speaking, white women do face barriers, but their barriers are not as severe or they don't encounter them as often as women of color. And then amongst women of color, Black women, at least in my study, seem to be encountering the most barriers. And again, these barriers are systemic. So For example, one of the chapters I'm working on is about the barriers that women face in online dating specifically. So, and offline as well, but it's online, you can see it more because it's kind of concentrated, and people, because men are anonymous, they're more free to say what it is they think. So all women, regardless of race, are finding that men are intimidated by their professional or their educational pursuits. So all women are facing that.
Quick question about that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but are the men who are intimidated, are you finding that they themselves are college educated men and they're still intimidated by college educated women? Or is it just men who aren't college educated who are intimidated by?
So this is a really good, this is a really good question. Sorry to cut you off.
No, I cut you off first.
No problem. This is a really good question. I'd have to go and quantify it, but there's a sense that I was getting a mixed sense. So some women were saying, oh, it's college educated. I would even say a lot of women would say it's college educated men and non-college educated men. But then there are a segment of women that are like, you know, I really thought that because I have the same level of education as college educated men, or men with master's degrees, professional degrees, or men with PhDs, I thought we would be on equal footing. And I thought that they wouldn't be intimidated by me. But women are getting it from all kinds of men, blue collar workers, white collar workers, all kinds of men. And some women said things like they felt like men sort of perform feminism. They feel like they say things that make them look as though they are, they believe in gender equity. But then when women start talking about their ambitions or talking about their careers, then those attitudes are belied. You see that actually maybe they're not into it as much as we think they are. And there's actually an article that I was just looking at as I was working on this chapter, and it's from this, it's an online article from a place called Jen, and this woman Her name is Jessica Valenti. The name of the article is "The Woke Men Who Still Want Housewives." And then the subtitle is "Men Who Claim to Believe in Equality Often Aren't Willing to Live It." So that's what I'm finding that's what I found in my study. It's like, well, men are paying lip service to this, but they either want women who can do the career thing and have serve that domestic role. Or it's like, well, you can have those pursuits, but when we get married, this is what's going to happen. I think the most striking example is a Black woman. And we can talk about how this differs by race. I didn't go into that much in my study, but I think that, like, for future study, we can see, like, is there like a big racial divide? But this medical student that I was talking to, she's a Black woman. She was dating this guy. He has a college degree, but she's obviously becoming a doctor. And then he tells her that whatever money she makes from being a doctor, that that's going to be play money. And his money is...
I'm sorry. I was so shocked.
He said, oh, well, my money is going to be the money that we use to pay bills, and your money is going to be play money. What? So, okay. And so this is, and you know, you in a time when women, we are meeting men in the different career paths. We're becoming engineers, becoming doctors. We're outpassing men in some of these careers.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear a man say, your money, you're going to go to 4 years of med school, then you're going to go to 3 years of residency, and then you might do 2 or 3 years of a fellowship. But all that money that you earn, all that time that you spent, that's all going to be play money and play time. My money is going to be the thing that helps us to stay afloat.
Wow.
So, that's, you know, we often...
Crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we often think about women having to balance these things once they come into the relationship. But I'm finding that women have to do this. They're worried about this before they come into a relationship. They're already thinking about, how is my education going to be seen in the dating market? How are men going to take in how I'm balancing my career choices with my marriage desires and my desires for children? Mm-hmm. They're already worried about this before they get into a relationship. So maybe the women before us, before our generation, they were still kind of breaking down the windows and breaking down the doors for us to get in. And now that we've gotten in and we're getting in before we get married, a lot of us women are still, we're considering this before we even get in.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm finding there. So all women are dealing with that. Black, white, Latina, Asian, they're all dealing with that. But in addition to that, women of color are encountering these gendered racial experiences where Latina and Asian women talk about how men kind of view them as fetishes, or they exoticize mm-hmm. them on Tinder or mm-hmm. OkCupid. Again, it's not that these things haven't been going on. We live in a racist society. So we're just going to take our racism and our sexism and we're going to put it onto technology. We're not liberated because now we have technology. You could even argue that because we can hide behind technology, we can even delve more into our fetishes or our discrimination or our racism even more because we're hidden behind the screen. And again, we're not just seeing this in dating. Every week, there's some public official that's outed for some racist thing they put on Facebook.
I know. It's so bizarre. It's like, really? How the judgment is so lacking.
Right.
Like, it's just right. crazy. Right. It's just crazy.
Yes. So think about that and people being online and doing the same thing, but maybe they can hide even more because they can use their first name or they can make up another name or whatever.
Yeah. I think some of it is intentional, obviously, but then I think part of it is also, and this is just the, you know, the dating coach in me, seeing how people make so many assumptions, even if you're talking about, you know, same race, same, like, forget it, taking the race question out of it for a moment. People make so many assumptions, just so mm-hmm. many assumptions about people. And so they default to stereotypes, just period. Yeah. They just default to stereotypes. Even, you know, I've had clients say like, oh, you know, this guy had a picture of himself at a football game and I hate football, so I'm not going to date him. And I'm like, you know, just dumb shit like that. Mm. And so it makes sense, just like you were saying, that, you know, when it comes to online dating, digital dating, social media, all these things, like, yeah, it's still just people bringing their same biases. So it makes sense that in a racist society, we're going to have people who are, you know, being discriminated against. One thing that is funny when you were, you know, talking about that article is that I have a client right now who is a doctor. She's a black woman doctor. Mm. And she went on a date with a guy. And the guy said, well, I'm going to let you pay because you make more money than I do.
Oh.
Oh, right.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it goes both ways.
So it goes both ways.
The responsibility is hers because she makes more money. So he's saying, oh, well, if we're living in, well, I don't know what he's assuming, but somehow he thinks that's equity. He thinks that that's equal.
So he was also a white man, by the way. So that really is a big issue. So it's interesting that you're seeing that it's men who are both educated and not educated. Mm-hmm. I guess, okay, just to bring some good news here, because anyone who's listening to this is like, I'm doomed. All is not lost. And I guess in your research, are you purely looking at data? Are you interviewing people as well?
Yeah, so let's just get some foundational things. I got excited about the topic and then tell you like how this actually happened. For me, the ways in which I want to bear witness is by talking to actual folks. So I do what's called qualitative research, where basically you are interested in the meaning of things and you talk to people. So I don't use big data. A lot of the work, though, a lot of the great work that has come before mine has been quantitative, and it's really given us a breath of what this is like, what people are experiencing, how people experience, how Black women experience exclusion, how women might experience sexism. But I'm looking more at the depth. So I interviewed 111 women of varying ethno-racial backgrounds. So again, like I said, Latina, Asian, white, Black. And I basically asked them questions about how their romantic partner search was going, their desires for marriage, what they were looking for in a partner, their preferences. So a lot of questions. And it would have been great if I could do something ethnographic. But the thing is, when you're asking people about dating and sex and intimacy, it's kind of weird to think about like, oh, well, let me go on a date with you and ear hustle. So there's no sort of observational piece or ethnographic piece, but it's really relying on people's stories. But what was great about my data is that people want to talk about this, right? They want to talk about their experiences. And so I had the privilege of hearing women's stories of dating, online dating, not using dating technology, what it means like to be offline, what it means to be offline versus online, what it means to be using multiple apps at once, what it means to be experiencing sexual racism online, or both sides of the coin for Latinas and Asian women experiencing inclusion, but at what cost, right? How does that inclusion look like? Yeah, a white man might want to date you, but why does he want to date you? You have to deal with that kind of thing. And I think Black women also deal with that. Like you were saying, I had a Black woman say, you know, a man would be like, oh, you're a beautiful Black woman. And she wants to know, why can't I just be beautiful? Why do I have to be a Black beautiful woman? So basically, yes, I talked to women. And as a social worker, that's what I am by trade. It was also a great opportunity to validate people's experiences. Also a woman who was single once, also a Black woman, also a woman who's used online dating. So it was great catharsis, I think, for my interviewees and for me. We got to sort of bond over these experiences. But also I want to produce a project where college educated women, millennial women could read this product and say, that's me, even if it's depressing, but being able to feel like I'm seen, if somebody is able to understand these experiences, and also, especially for Black women, to understand these experiences as systemic. A lot of times with Black folks, people want to solve our issues using agentic means. Well, y'all just need to work harder. You just need to open up your preferences. You need to not just want to date Black men. Maybe you shouldn't go for a college degree, right? There are all of these systemic issues, racism, sexism, but they want Black women to solve it using agentic solutions. And my work, what I want to say is Black women, the problem is not you. The problem is a system where there is a sexualized racial hierarchy and you're at the bottom of that. You didn't choose that, right? Yeah. So that's the message I also want to get across to Black women is, if anyone is asking you to solve a structural problem using agentic means, don't listen to them. That's bad advice.
Solve racism and then you'll have love. It'll be fine. Yeah.
And I'm not saying don't go to Francesca for dating advice or don't be online. I'm not saying that. Just understand which issues are yours and which issues are about the system. Those are two separate things. Sometimes they intersect. Sometimes one impacts the other, but a lot of times the constraints that Black women are facing, the constraints that women are facing when they're dating are about systems, and we need to be honest about that.
Yes,
we can't absolutely. Be living in a world where we think that because we have technology, we have liberated the technology from patriarchal structures and from racist structures. We have it. It's the same thing with algorithms. Like, people are making algorithms. People are impacted by oppressive structures. So those algorithms are going to reflect that.
Yeah. That's an excellent point, because I think there's this idea that technology is like unbiased, you know,
exactly.
it's inherently unbiased. It's neutral. That's right. That's the word. Like, it's neutral, and it's not. It's still programmed by humans, and humans are never, ever, ever, ever neutral.
Exactly.
So there's still effects to that. But I think one thing that you touched on, and because I want to bring some good news to this, because online dating, and I encourage everyone who's single and who's looking to meet someone, I encourage everyone to make sure that you're not solely relying on online dating, because for all of these reasons and a million others.
Yeah.
But I think for women of color in particular, you should absolutely be online. And there are plenty of women of color who are meeting amazing partners online. So I want to put that out there. But let's also not limit yourself to that. And these are really important reasons to know why it's important not to limit yourself to that.
Right.
So it's like, whatever it takes in terms of developing the skills that you need to start to connect with men offline, because I think, frankly, this specifically relates to race, but it also is a rule for everyone. When you're online, you're, like I said before, you know, you're making these judgments about people. You're weeding people out for reasons that you would never weed a person out if you met them face to face, because you just wouldn't. You know, you're not asking people like, do you have a cat? When you meet them. Like, if you're at an event and you meet a guy and you're interested in him, you're not like, do you have a cat?
Yeah.
And he's like, what? Yeah. We just, you know, but online, I mean, I know so many women, they're like, if a guy has a cat, I'm never dating a man who has a cat. You know, and it's like, you know, like, you can just get into that mindset online where you're just so rigid. So when you start to meet people organically and you meet people face to face, it's a lot easier to take them as a human versus as a stereotype. So that's one thing. And so I know that you're married. Mm-hmm. And where did you meet your husband?
So I actually met my husband at church. I know it's so old school. I never even thought that would happen. He was the worship director at a church that we used to go to. And I joined the worship team because I was tired of just doing graduate school 24/7. So I wanted to do something that was fulfilling to me. And that's how we ended up meeting. I never in a million years would have thought that he would be the person that I would meet first at church, and that he would be the person that I would marry.
Why? What about him is so surprising?
So basically, you know, like many women and many Black women, I have internalized the narratives that say, well, you're Black and you're educated, so no serious Christian guy is going to be interested in you. No cute white guy is going to be interested in you, you know, and no good looking church going white man is going to be interested in you. So I had internalized those narratives and I was working through them. So I came into that space like, I am who I am. I'm coming into my own woman. I've dated closet racists. I'm not about that life anymore. I'm going in on my terms. So if you're not meeting my terms, it is what it is. Like, me as a full Black woman, how I am, I'm great. I'm enough. And again, it's not magic, but I needed to be in that mindset when I met my husband in order to recognize that, like, anything is possible. And I'm I'm wanted, I'm desired, and I'm valuable. Again, it's not magic. There are plenty of Black women who are there and don't have a partner. I'm not saying that like, oh, you need to be there to have a partner, but that's where I was in my journey. And my husband is white. And what I say is that if you're going to be a Black woman, if you're a Black woman who's pro-Black, you love being a Black woman, you love everything about Blackness, you love everything about Black people, if you're going to date interracially, date somebody who brings you even more into that Blackness, who celebrates that about you and all that that's about for you. That looks different for everybody because Blackness is heterogeneous. It's not homogeneous. So someone who's going to celebrate that fullness of who you are. So that's how I met my husband. Yeah. But I feel like for Black women, it's like, even if you're meeting offline, people are still making judgments about you. When I met my husband, I had decided that I was done with online dating because I was done with people asking, you know, like, oh, have you ever dated a white guy before? Or some guy liked dating Black women because we had pubic hair. And I was like, look, like,
oh my yeah. God.
So I was like, I can't.
So out of order.
They're out of pockets. Out of pocket. I'll lie. So I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, it wasn't so much like, if he doesn't meet this list, I'm not dating him. It was just like, you know, these are the things that I want and I'm not finding them. And if I don't find them, that's okay. As long as I'm okay with the fact that these are the decisions that I'm making. And even though we live in a society that's like, oh, we're so me focused, Black women, we need to be about ourselves. People like, yeah. we just need yeah. to be about supporting each other, supporting ourselves, being healthy, being well-rounded in the ways yeah. that are fulfilling for us. Yes, that goes for all people and it goes for all women, but Black women, I feel like, occupy a special place in U.S. society and in the world that has its pros and its cons, but we need to be who we are and we need to believe that we are enough. So whether you're searching online or offline, it's not that either of those things are going to be easy. They're going to be pros and cons for both, but it's really important to remember you are enough and you can yes. face the challenges as they come. And you don't have, it's not your fault that there are structural challenges. Mm-hmm. You might not like men with who have cats. You might have to deal with that. That's a personal issue. But if people are online, say they don't date Black women, or they're like, have you ever dated a Black woman? Or they're saying, I've never had sex with a Black woman. You didn't bring that on yourself. We're dealing yes. with colonialism. We're dealing with slavery. We're dealing with imperialism. We wear all of that on our bodies. That's yep. enough. Mm-hmm. So who you are is enough as Black women go into this process. And yes, again, that goes for all women, but especially for Black women.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh. Okay, I love everything you just said. One quick thing. One thing that you said about dating closet racists.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit more about that, because I think that there are people who think that, oh, well, if somebody wants to date a Black woman, how could he be racist? Which is a crazy question. It's like, you know, like, it's funny, like, I did my 23andMe, and I am like even though I am a dark-skinned Black woman, I look like I could be from the motherland directly, but I have a lot of European ancestry, I've got Asian ancestry, I've got Japanese, I was like, what on earth? This is crazy, but anyway, it's interesting, because I'm like, oh, I really want to know the story behind, like, my Japanese ancestry, like, myself, you know, but of course, for the European ancestry, I'm like, well, I know where that came from. So that's not surprising. Yeah. But I think people are still kind of like, oh, well, if someone's willing to date a Black person, then how could they be racist?
See, this is the product of living in a colorblind society, or a society where people think is post-racial. And I think this goes for wanting to date Latinas. This goes for wanting to date Asian women as well. I think in my experience, it's that people may have some kind of, it can be a fetish, it can be a preference, the lines are blurred, but they're impacted by structure. So people can have those preferences or those fetishes, but they then may hold actual racist views. So I remember this guy that I was dating, I was arguing with him about, I don't even remember what it was, but basically not about being passive activists as Black people. Like, people try to sugarcoat MLK. That's what we were talking about. Trying to sugarcoat MLK, and they somehow believe that if you're like MLK, then that's like a good anti-racist activist to be. Whereas if you're like a Malcolm X, you're a bad anti-racist activist. And we got into this heated argument, and he's like, "Well, you're just being violent. You're being violent like Malcolm X." And I was like,
"Oh my God."
So that should have been like my first warning. But then we continue to have these discussions where he was like, "Well, you know, any progress that Black folks make has to be slow. They just have to wait their turn." And I was like, so we were arguing about Du Bois, right? Du Bois is radical in his own way. Not even in his own way, just in general. He's radical. He's calling out white people right and left. His view is not only, his view of racism is not only domestic, it is global. The ways in which he sees capitalism and inferiority and whiteness and Blackness working together to elevate whiteness and to demonize Blackness, it's very global. And he's not looking for slow change. So he and I are having this argument, and he's just like, "You just have to wait. Like, the society just has to." And I was like, "Okay, we're done. Oh, I can't take you anymore."
Yeah. You tried.
I really did. I really did. I think a lot of Black women do that, because the thing is, like, we feel like we have to censor ourselves because there are these narratives going around as us as aggressive and us as angry. So, like, a lot of Black women, we're not dating authentically. College educated women especially, because we're in these white spaces, so there's a lot of censoring of who we are, and we do that while we're dating.
Right. We know how to do it so well because we've been doing that our whole lives, so it's an easy mode to fall into if you're not
careful. Yeah. Exactly. And to be upwardly mobile in the U.S. as a Black person, you have to adhere to respectability politics as much as you don't want to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what gets rewarded in the system, not necessarily authentic Blackness, whatever that means for you. There are certain lines that you have to fall into.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of Black women end up dating non-Black men because it's just like, well, I don't exactly agree with you, or we have our own internalized racism that we haven't really dealt with, and we think that it's okay to date people like that. So, but I think they're also, but I think that Black women are also at the same time getting hip to the no and being like, "Nah, that's not a person for me." And I think that also is, goes into, you know, what it means when a Black person wants to date another Black person. I don't think that's racist. I think that that's about racial survival. That's my opinion, right? Being a Black person in the U.S., especially now, requires a certain set of skills that white people don't have to have, Latinos don't have to have, Asians don't have to have. You require a certain set of skills and a certain kind of community. And if you want to marry a Black person and do that together, you know, I feel like that also needs to be acknowledged. It might not need to be acknowledged for white people because they might not get it. They might not understand it, but they can't call it racist. I do not believe that you can call that racist.
Yes, not racism. That's the wrong definition of racism.
Exactly. So if you understand Black and African and African American history, then you're going to understand why people may have that desire, because it's not just about, "Oh, we're Black, I'm Black." It's about like, where there's a way in which we have to survive in this world, and I want me to do it with a particular kind of person who understands
that. Well, when also like talking about, you know, that discussion, those discussions you were having with that white guy that you dated, like, who wants to have that kind of conversation? Who wants to be in a romantic relationship with somebody that you have to have these conversations? Exactly. Like, that is not that is not okay. And I think, you know, like my boyfriend is white and I met him walking down the street. And but he's also not American, which I think helped. I mean, and listen, I've dated plenty of white men who are American, so I'm not, and you know, and some of them were great, amazing guys. I think it does help that he's not American because he doesn't, first of all, when I talk to him about race, when I talk to him about things, he doesn't have his own, he's not like imprinting his own, well, oh, well, that's just how it is. He's like, he's really curious. He's really open. He's like, wow, like, tell me about that. Like, oh, what was that like for you? Like, he's coming from it from a perspective of really trying to understand it, which I think, and it's funny because even the other day he said, I don't even remember what we were talking about, but he was like, what is wrong with white men? And I'm like, baby, that is the $1 trillion question of life. Like, it's interesting to see like how his eyes have like opened to race in a way, because he's from Australia. And so they have their own thing there, but it's different. But what is the solution? Do you think that more women of color, I mean, obviously we can't solve racism, right? It's not on us to solve racism. And I do think that meeting people offline is one step that really helps in terms of finding people who are going to just see you as a person and not see you as, you know, an Asian woman or a Black woman or something like that. But I mean, I know you're not a dating coach, but you have a lot of information about this, and you, not to mention your own experience. So what is your advice for women of color who are struggling with this? Like, really want to date Black men, which I understand. And that was me at one time. I, mm-hmm. as a rule, mm-hmm. only dated Black mm-hmm. men, to the point where when white guys would ask me out, even if I liked them and I thought they were cool, I had a nice connection with them, I would still say no, mm-hmm. because I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then I got over it because I was like, who am I trying to, what am I trying to prove here? Right? Like, I just want somebody who is down for me and I can like be happy with. And sometimes that's mm-hmm. maybe, you know, it's not going to look the way I thought it was going to look necessarily. As a woman who's married to a white man, as a Black woman who's married to a white man, are you an advocate for women of color being more open to, you know, people outside of their race?
I don't know if it's more of an advocate or not being an advocate. I think that everybody is making compromises on their preferences. I sometimes believe that Black women have to make more compromises. I'm not going to sit here and be like, Black women need to do this. Black women are already doing that. So in my study, I found that Black women were already branching out. Some studies have even shown that Black women, they might not want to give up the Black part, and they try dating Black women. So they explore bisexuality as well. My solution is, do what is fulfilling for you. If you're going to want a Black man, stick to it. Examine why that is, right? A lot of self-reflection and a lot of self-awareness. There's only so much that we as individuals can do in changing the system, but look deep inside of you and what's the work you have to do. And if that means not giving up a desire for a Black man, don't give it up. Why is it that we're always asking Black women to do the work? No one else is asking anybody else to do the work to adapt to Black women. We're always asking Black women to do the work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't want Black women to do any more work except the work that leads them to personal fulfillment. And only they can know what's that for them.
Yes.
So if that's expanding your preferences to include non-Black men, do it. If that's not expanding those preferences, do that. If it... in a season of your life, you were open to non-Black men, but something has happened that has caused you to be like, I'm never doing that again, then that's the journey you're on. Mm-hmm. I want Black women to be autonomous individuals. That for me is the solution. Be fully human.
Yes.
That's it. That's all I want. Ugh. Be fully human. Express yourself the same way that white women get to be fully human. It's not that they're not facing gender stuff, but there's a lot more space for them to be individuals. I want Black women to have that. So if that means you're flip-flopping back and forth, great. You're human. You get to do
right,
that.
You get to figure it out.
You get to figure it out. That's it. Yeah. So for me, that's
really
the solution.
I love that, Sarah.
Live
really
into your full humanity, because we're that's like point A. We're literally still there. Africans, African Americans, we're literally still trying to help people understand that we're fully human. So if we're still there, that's the battle we need to be fighting, both systemically and individually. So yes. I'm not out here about like these solutions. No, live into your own full humanity in a way that's healthy and in a way that has that is fulfilling and is promising for you. That's my solution.
I love that. And that's, I talk about this in the context of self-love. I'm always, you know, I'm always beating the drum of self-love. And it's like, if you are struggling with anything, if you're struggling, you know, romantically, you're struggling to meet a person, just make sure that you're continuing to go inward, to just really knowing yourself, loving yourself, taking care of yourself, celebrating the person that you are. Because the more that we heal, the more that we heal this wound of not feeling worthy and not loving ourselves, then all of this other stuff becomes a lot less relevant. It's like a lot of these problems of like, how do I meet him, or who is he, or what color is he? A lot of that just completely evaporates if you go deeper into self-love.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's not, this is not a thing that can be done in isolation, right? So I'm not saying close off the doors. It's finding community as well that supports you through that. And for some people, that's going to be Christian community. For some people, that's going to be Black sororities. For some people, it's going to be their alumni groups. Whatever, find community, like you said, that holds you down, because you can't do it alone.
Yes, yes.
And people that are honest with you as they're holding you down, because we all need truth tellers in our lives, and we need people who are wise in our lives and people who understand who we are and can speak truth and wisdom into the situations that we're in.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love that. Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, I think educating white people, educating, I mean, everyone just needs this education, because what I did experience and what I found is that sometimes in talking to white people about racism and dating, they're sort of like, oh, you know what? I guess I do. I need to check myself, because they don't even realize that. Because I've talked to white men about this, and they're just sort of like, oh, I just kind of assume that Black women don't want to date me. So they're just like, I'm just passing on her because I'm like, well, she's not going to date me. And that's just a default assumption they have. And it's like, well, no, like just start treating people like humans, right?
Exactly.
And not making these assumptions. And I think the more that we can have these conversations, I think the more people can start to look at their own behavior and say, wait, the way that I'm showing up in dating, the way that I'm showing up online or offline or wherever, is this in alignment with my values? Because it's not.
That's very true.
The answer is sometimes like, ooh, maybe it's not, right? So, you know, no matter what your color is.
And don't have those conversations with people that are not, that don't want to have the conversations. And Black
don't
women.
Don't waste your breath.
Exactly. It's not your job to educate everyone. If you don't feel like you want to be educating people, you don't have to do that. Again, we get to make choices, even though our choices might be more constrained than other racial or ethnic groups. We still get to make those choices.
Amen to that. Well, that is perfect. That is perfect. One last question for you. If you had a megaphone that was loud enough, and maybe you just gave a great answer to this question, so maybe you're like, what I just said. If you had a megaphone that was loud enough for the whole world to hear about love, and you sent out a message about love, what would that message be?
You are enough.
Oh, yes.
That's it.
I love that. That's perfect.
You are enough. And it's not you are enough, like you are enough if you continue to look inward and work on the things that make you healthy, work on the things that make you not toxic to other people. But all the things about you that are good, all the things about you that bring joy to yourself and bring joy to others, all those things that make you who you are and you make you excited about yourself, those things are enough.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. That's so beautiful. Sarah, thank you so, so much. I'm going to link to your social media and to your articles, the Philadelphia Inquirer article about you, and then the alumni, the University of Pennsylvania alumni article, which is what was forwarded to me. That's how I found out about you. But is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about? Ways to contact you, or I mean, are you looking for more research subjects? Like,
you know, yes, actually, I do. So I'm gonna kind of plug myself. I'm on the job market. So if you're looking for a sociology researcher who does the work that I do and who's interested in looking at respondents holistically and who wants to bear witness to the things that people are doing and who wants to help their students understand how to do that, I'm your girl. So I'm looking for a job. And in the future, I want to do this work with LGBTQ plus folks. So if you're someone who thinks you would be interested in either doing that work with me or somebody who'd want to be interviewed for something like that, please feel free to contact me.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. Amazing. Well, your contact information, I'll put that in the show notes so people can reach out to you. But yeah, I hope that everyone does, that everyone gets to talk to you. This has been so amazing and informative and a little bit depressing, but it's okay because when we love ourselves and we understand our worth, yep, then we find love anyway. So even with these obstacles, so... Yeah. Thank you, Sarah.
And I want to thank you so much, Francesca, for giving me this opportunity. I'm this little old woman doing this in my little silo, but I'm so glad that I'm just, thank you for being creepy, as you put it, which I think you're being totally normal, and reaching out to me and giving me this opportunity. And I just hope that your message and your work just gets out there. And yeah, I'm more hope and light and peace and love for you.
Oh my gosh. And right back at you, honey, right back at you. The world needs this work that you're doing. So I fully support you in any way that I can. And there you have it, my interview with Sarah Adeyinka Scold. So please be sure to check the show notes where I will have links to all of Sarah's contact information, as well as the Philadelphia Inquirer article about her dissertation. And you can also find in the show notes lots of ways to stay in touch with me and the podcast. I am at Dear Franny on all social media platforms, and the podcast is at Dear Franny Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. So feel free to connect with me in any and all of those places. We are very, very, very grateful for you, for listening to the show, for rating the show, reviewing the show. If you haven't yet rated and reviewed the show, please take the time to do so. I'd be incredibly, incredibly grateful. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for listening. I definitely appreciate that you have chosen to spend a little bit of your day with me, so I don't take that for granted. Have a beautiful day or night wherever you are.